Hello everyone, my name is Murat Meyer with DSEF. I'd like to welcome you to the Growth and Outlook. All right, I'd like to welcome you to the Growth and Outlook Insights workshop. Please remember to silence your cell phones, save your questions to the end of the presentation. All workshops are being recorded. Please wait to wait for the microphone before asking questions. Let me introduce the participants. We have Lisa Gooding, Executive Vice President, Ipsos, Mary Earley, Global Senior Manager, Consumer and Member Insights, Herbalife, Monica Wood, Vice President, Global Consumer and Member Insights, Herbalife, also DSA Industrial Research Committee Chair, Gordon Hester, General Manager of Sales, US and Canada, PM International. And Lisa will be presenting foundational insights of the new era. Mary, US macroeconomic trends, thank you. Monica, top line from Growth and Outlook study. Gordon, key takeaways. And Lisa, may I have you?
Thanks, Murat, and thanks to all of you for coming over to our session. I very much appreciate it. Again, I'll be talking about the foundational insights of the new era and really looking at a macro level what we're dealing with in the world today before my colleagues bring us more focused into your particular sector. So when we think about today, we're entering what you could think of as a new world order. In fact, some might say it's a new world disorder. If you think past to the post-World War II era, the last 80 years or so, what's unique about today, in addition to all of those things that we're recognizing and we'll be talking about as we move forward, is that we're not facing just one challenge, one primary challenge as a humanity, as society, but we're facing many different challenges at one time. And they're all within what we refer to as macro forces. There are six primary macro forces that impact all of us and our world. These macro forces are quite obvious. We know that they will exist 5 years from now, and they are societies in flux. Technology, we'll be talking about several of these moving forward. Society inequalities and opportunities, the environment, politics, and well-being. So for today, I'm choosing just five of them to dive in a bit more deeply. Aging, life stages, technology, impacts of inflation, and climate change. And once we touch lightly on these as macro forces, we'll go more deeply into some of the trends that are driving them. Move to your phone. I'll continue using this one. Okay.
Just so you don't think about it.
Aging populations. Average age of people is getting greater. We know that birth rates are decreasing. The birth rate right now in the US is 1.66 children on average per couple, versus in the late 1950s it was nearly 4. And so the population is aging, the number of people in the workforce is decreasing. There's going to obviously be a great impact on the economy and social care programs. So again, we'll talk more about technology coming up, but as we think about our companies upgrading and investing in technology, how do we accommodate older people who might want to become distributors, who are the end customers? We really need to think about them. People focus so much on Gen Z right now, and of course they're important. They have a longer lifetime value, let's be honest. In fact, Chandler, my colleague, is speaking on this tomorrow with me. But a lot of the money, a lot of the opportunity, and a great portion of the population is older. We shouldn't be ignoring them. They're very important to our success in the immediate future and you know, for decades to come. Life stage evolutions obviously is tied to all of this as well. And it's very interesting what people are defining now versus in the past in terms of defining what success means, in terms of, you know, we hear about work-life balance, in terms of what really is a career path. You know, it was only a generation or so ago where you chose a path and you stuck with it for your entire working life. Now, people that enter their first career are likely to have six more completely different careers throughout their working life. And so it's a very, very different world. And as we think about moving forward, distributors, customers are just people, right? We're all facing these same topics. We're all living in this same world. And so sometimes we like to think about the world of B2B or consumers or distributors or customers differently. We're all of those things potentially. We're all living in this world of macro forces where technology is probably the greatest impact that we're all experiencing. Many of us are trying to figure out how to loop technology into our business to make it easier. So hopefully we can increase the human impact and decrease some of the stuff that might be more easily automized moving forward. We really need to think about the correct use of technology and not just infuse it because we can. In fact, there's some pushback from younger people saying, you know, too much technology we recognize isn't good for our health. And so thinking about anti-tech, should you infuse it? But where can you almost counter it and find some strengths is something for consideration as well. Oh, and not to be forgotten, one of the impacts of technology has been our shortened attention span. And so as you think about your communications moving forward, as you think about your packaging, as you think about all of those elements that you use to communicate, being concise has never been more important than it is these days. Let's talk for a moment about inflation. Obviously, it remains high as the threat of recession looms. Energy prices are going to continue to impact the economy and spending. This is not a United States issue. This is a global issue. There's only so much you can do in terms of managing pricing. There has to be focus on where can you add value. And we're going to touch on some of those places where people are actually willing to pay more, even in this environment, for certain things. So again, of course, do what you can in terms of just adjusting pricing to the level that you think you can sell the most, but also think about where you can add value. Climate change might seem sort of separate from the business world in some ways, but of course it's not. We are all feeling the impact of climate change. I'm from Minnesota. This week we have the worst air quality in the nation, thanks to the Canadian wildfires. But from a business perspective, we really need to think about regulations. You may have seen in the UK, there were some, just a couple weeks ago, new regulations in terms of uses of terms like natural, healthy, organic. Those definitions are becoming tighter, and we need to really think about how we're going to be authentic, which we'll talk about later, and what we're going to communicate. And then also, as the world evolves in this arena, there's going to be much more challenge in terms of who has control of particular resources. You know, we're seeing a lot of our CPG clients move from things that already have liquid in them to more powders that can be added for a wide variety of reasons, of course, but just water is a big concern for the future. So I'm hoping and guessing that most of you are, but really thinking about how the world is evolving, how are these regulations going to impact your business? A lot of what's happening in the European Union will eventually come to the US, or at least should be considered as likely. And what disruption are you going to face from all of these changes? All right, so those are the macro forces. Let's now think about the trends that influence these macro forces. The macro forces are hard to control, and in fact, as I mentioned, they're not going anywhere in the next 5 years. But the trends change more quickly. Here are 12 trends that Ipsos, my company, has identified. We're a market research company. I should have mentioned about a $2.5 billion company that researches markets. And here are the 12 trends that we track. As with the macro forces, I've selected a few of them that we will dive into more deeply here. The first is conscientious health. Health is becoming more holistic, taking into account multiple meanings associated with broader well-being. There was a time where your health was simply your weight and the counts that you got when you went to your last doctor appointment. These days, health means your mental health, means your spiritual health. Your overall well-being is all part of health these days. When we ask consumers, 79% of them in the U.S. say that I need to do more to look after myself on the physical side. So there's that physical piece. But there's also great recognition of the systemic health inequalities in our system. There's the mental health crisis. I really feel for kids that tried to navigate puberty through COVID. That had to be tough. We touched on the aging populations, the impact of technology on mental and physical health. I don't know how many of you have watched the Apple videos associated with the new VR goggles. If you haven't, definitely do it. It's amazing. You basically can have your goggles on and have the whole internet voice activated, be watching movies in panoramic, and be having a conversation. One of the benefits of these VR goggles is that you don't have to take them off to see your neighbor and have a conversation with them. So things like that are really going to be game changers for a lot of us and for a lot of companies. In AI, I will talk more about AI, but AI is probably going to be the biggest game changer in our lifetimes. And there's tremendous opportunity associated with that. Hopefully it's going to give us all more time and more opportunity to be human. And there's tremendous threats associated with that, which again, we'll touch on in a couple more slides. And then we talked about health, the combination of health and technology. I mean, think about AI and the likelihood that AI will do a better job diagnosing you than a doctor based on certain symptoms, but also the legal ramifications of a company that's daring enough to toy with that. Who do you sue when the AI gets it wrong? So there's so many complexities that we're going to face in the future. Authenticity. When you think about a world that's uncertain, like we're facing right now, there's sort of two paths to stay sane, right? There's one, envision a future where you have some control and life is pleasant. It can be hard to do. There's also look back to a time that you remember as comforting. That's easier. It may not always be accurate. Our memories certainly aren't. But it's easier to go back and think about times that felt favorable. 52% are willing to spend more for products that have an image that appeals to them. So thinking about how you can tie your brand and product imagery to things that matter to people, whether it's associated with ESG. Again, we'll touch a bit more on that. What can you do in terms of your image, knowing that health matters a lot to people, with well-being? Is there a place in your portfolio to really help people feel that push towards well-being and feel that they're getting closer to that arena? There's a lot of opportunity with authenticity. And it's also important to note that especially young people, they can sniff out lack of sincerity a mile away. And of course, with social media, all of that is articulated very loudly. So if you're going to make a move associated with authenticity, it really needs to be accurate and sincere, because doing it wrong could be more harmful than taking a different path would be entirely. All right, tech. We've talked about tech a bit. I mean, it's just, as I said, immersed in every arena. Remember in 2007 when the smartphone you know, became prevalent, we thought it was going to make our lives simpler, that we'd all be more connected. And I suppose to some degree that's true, but it's also, you'll hear people saying their teenagers have friends over and they don't speak to one another. They just sit on their phones together. You'll hear about the anxiety associated with feeling always connected and the stress that that can cause in our lives. So there's so many great things happening with technology, but also so many potential concerns. About 90% of the people in the U.S. right now have a cell phone. I'm surprised it's not even higher, to be honest. So perhaps not surprisingly, 71% say they can't imagine life without the internet. You know, when you think about this, we talked about the Google goggles or VR goggles. You can imagine, you know, sitting around your home, being able to activate access to anything with your voice, and also, you know, hanging out with your family. You could each be watching a new movie and panoramic, you know, individually. It's really quite amazing. AI, I was actually speaking to one of the leaders at Microsoft a couple weeks ago, and he noted that their CEO is going around the globe right now talking to leaders of different nations about the impact of AI. Interestingly, one of the stops on his tour is the Vatican, and the conversation there is revolving around, what about when AI articulates a consciousness? It's out of a sci-fi movie. You know, what does that mean ethically and for our society when that day comes? I should have mentioned, you probably all know, Microsoft is the engine that was built that powers ChatGPT right now. So they're behind that. If you think about, you know, the upside, imagine all of the, you have a conversation with someone, a business conversation. AI listens in. This is reality today with Microsoft. You mentioned during that conversation, it does text analysis. You mentioned in the conversation that you'll send the deck or you'll follow up with dates for a meeting. The AI hears that. As soon as the call is over, the email pops up with you, fully populated with what you said. You just hit send. That gives you more time to be a human, right? So that's a benefit that exists today you can buy. But there's downside, or at least fears as well. Perhaps you read about the example of the military experimenting with AI to override human decisions when the human is making decisions that don't fit the mission. Or imagine a situation where AI decides that the humans are wrong. If it's really focused on the higher mission, what if it makes some unethical choices to get there? Someone in a particular market isn't paying their energy bill on time. AI recognizes that the best way to get someone to pay their bill on time is to turn off their heat. So it turns off heat in a certain neighborhood. It may make choices that are really difficult. And of course it could be weaponized if in the wrong hands. There's lots of nefarious examples we could imagine in terms of what's happening there. Oh, and in terms of increased automation, my daughter, who I admit is a bit of an introvert, was in Japan a couple of weeks ago. She went into a restaurant, ordered on a kiosk, no staff visible in the restaurant, went into a private cube with another keypad, put the specialty things she wanted in her ramen or whatever it was. About 5 minutes later, a screen lifted up, a bowl came under the screen went down. The only sign she ever saw of a human in the restaurant was the hand pushing the bowl through. And she thought it was great. But what does this mean in terms of us being a social society? It's a lot to think about. So as you think about technology, this is a huge undertaking, and where you're going to go with it in terms of your company, think about, what is it good for and where should you pull back on it? Where is it really going to support those things that humans need versus where could it potentially do harm? There's a lot to think about there. Nostalgia. I kind of touched on that a moment ago, but again, when people think about what's going to drive them to imagining the future, one of the things that many people lean towards is the past. In fact, we asked people whether or not they agreed with a variety of statements, one of them being, I would like my country to be the way it used to be, and 61% said they would like that. And there's a political association here in many ways. In fact, as an aside, as market researchers, One of the greatest differentiators on almost every topic is political affiliation. Things that you would, I mean, obviously there are things that have to do with policy that you would imagine that those divide people, but even things in terms of, you know, preferences in terms of creaminess of peanut butter. One of the things that you'll see that differentiates people on so many bizarre topics is whether they lean more left or more right. And so this is not one of the trends that I'm going into in great detail today, but it is associated with, you know, interest in the country being the way that it used to be. And there's certainly more division in a lot of ways, including on this topic, as you can imagine.
So, I hate to interrupt you.
Sure.
But we are in a really tight time schedule.
Okay.
So if I can, with my apologies, if I can ask you to wrap up, at least for the moment.
Sure.
Because I want to make sure we get to the specifics of the rest.
Absolutely. I will pass to Mary right now. And through Marat or the DSA, you're welcome to follow up with us on any of these topics that you would like. Here you go, Mary.
I'm going to present the top line, and this is just the top line now, from the Growth and Outlook study. Many of you who've been around the industry know this is our most important study in direct selling. This is an annual study. The different direct selling companies give us their sales data, and then confidentially we collect it together and then analyze it, and we're able to report it back to you and tell you the sales for direct selling in the United States. So again, our most important study. This is top line. We just literally got the data back. So, you know, we got the data back. So when I say top line, I'm talking top line. And what we're going to have is in September, there's going to be a full report that we're going to issue with all of the data. So keep in mind, you know, this is really, you're the first to see it in a way. So lucky you for being in this room today. So here we go. So here's the direct sales for 2022. And what we can see is that they're down a little bit. They're down 5%. That said, they're above where they were, they're above post-pandemic. So post-pandemic, they're definitely higher than where we were before the pandemic. But we're slightly down. We're still a huge, you know, at $40.5 billion, it's still a huge industry in the U.S. Now, what we do is we cut the data by different categories, and I'm going to quickly go through the different categories that we collect, and you can see the bars, and then you can see the different groups. So, for example, wellness, we're down 8%. It's a $14.1 billion category. We're going to read the rest of them going down like that so you understand how we're reading the data. Then we have services. That's actually up in 2022, was up 10% driven by financial services. Then we have home and family care. That's down 11%. Personal care down 17%. Clothing and accessories down 13%. And leisure and education down 3%. Now, party plan is a really important part of our business as well, as you all know. That is down as well, again, at about levels pre-pandemic. Let's look at some demographics and see the demographics. And first of all, let's look at our preferred customers. As you know, preferred customer programs have really become popular in direct selling companies, and that's because, you know, they're great programs. They drive in customers because they offer possible discounts or other incentives, and they've been growing, okay? But 2022, we saw a slight dip, again, still above the pandemic time period. Now, discount buyers have been going down. And why is that? Because people are moving to become preferred customers. So we anticipate this will continue to go down. This is not a surprise to us, because wouldn't you rather be a preferred customer and get some perks than be just a discount buyer who gets no perks? So that's what's going on here. And then we have our U.S. Direct sellers. We see a dip in those numbers in 2022. Gordon, if time permitting, is going to have a brief chance to talk about what we anticipate going forward in 2023 and 2024. We do anticipate to see an uptick in direct sellers, but it's kind of flat, if you will, compared to the pre-pandemic time period. Now, demographics, as a demography for direct sellers, we skew female big time. You can see that. And we also, you know, our predominant age ranges are between 35 and 54 at 50%. So that's predominant, but we have a nice age range distribution, as you can see. We also skew white and Caucasian at 83%. But that said, when we look at Hispanics, we can see that we're seeing a slight uptick in Hispanics. So at 22.9% in 2022, that's a mouthful. And then women, again, like we said, that's our predominant sex for direct sellers. Now, this is my last slide, and then hopefully I've left time for Gordon to say a few words. You have 1 minute, Gordon, if I finish the slide, you have no time. But anyhow, under 24, you can see that we're at 6%, and it's been pretty steady. Then you look at 24 to 34-year-olds, we've seen a slight dip in 2022. And then I'm not going to go through each age group, so I can leave Gordon maybe 1 minute of time here. But we have seen an increase as a percent of, 55-plus. So now there's a test. Just kidding. If you need anything at all, you guys, feel free to reach out to me or Murad, and we can give you more information. Thank you.
I would also suggest that over lunchtime, if perhaps you could make yourselves available for
sure.
Some follow-up discussion, and then, of course, otherwise, too. Take a few minutes, Gordon, because we want to
Thank you. So on key takeaways, first of all, it's a pleasure to me, and thanks you all for coming out. I think sometimes when you're going through a challenging time, it's important to have perspective, to have a wider gaze. So I wanted to start there, but understanding the core success factor for any direct selling and network marketing is engage critical mass. We are not just in the sales business, we're in the relationship business. And it's important that those relationships are engaged in helping our cultures and our business grow in the impact we make. So if you look at this is a business opportunity globally, what do you see here? A 30-year trend of growth. So regardless of what's going on, we see positive things. If we look at it from the sales side, in 30 years, the industry has done almost $3.7 billion in sales. Now, how does the US play into that? From a U.S. sales perspective, we have historically represented 24% of the worldwide market and equally 24% of the worldwide sales force. So when I look at the numbers, and I wish I had more time to kind of dig into them, I will tell you that the distribution channel matters. We have changed hundreds of millions of lives over the year, and I've continued to believe that the opportunity exists because of the strength of the distribution channel. And I think that's an important takeaway. We clearly have proven the entrepreneurial business works. Last year, we had 120 million direct sellers globally. And in the 30 years, our industry has been shown to be agile and to be able to adjust to all the things that are going on, whether it's the speed of change, whether it's change, whether it's political, social, economic. So with this, I can tell you the numbers that we're listening to me are a little bit deceiving. So when you take it in a bigger kind of look at this and you look at what is the cumulative annual growth rate over 30 years, sales 4.05%, sales force 3.99%. If we look at those between 2019 and 22, from looking at a longer term perspective, things aren't that bad. We're just in a transitional state. And I think to remain competitive in the marketplace, we have to continue to fight to be competitive and relevant in the marketplace, whether it's for getting consumers or opportunity seekers. We have to continue to attract good leadership to our business. Of course, we have to continue to focus on our next generation. And most important to me, I think as an industry, we have to really come together and practice what we call the ethical practice of network marketing. Reputation does matter, and this is an important part. I can tell you personally, I think we're going through an amazing transitional period, and the most beautiful thing about it is you always come out stronger. And I see this every day at PM. In the last 3 years, as there's been transition, our business has went up $1.5 billion annually. So there are success stories out there. And anybody that is struggling, I think what you have to look at is, what are you doing to build continuously engaged and larger relationships based? And our history shows that we're good at that. And on that note, I'll call it a day. Thank you for coming.